Perek Chaf Vav 26. Everybody have it?
Mm-hmm.
We're ready to go?
Yeah.
All right. Let's stop here.
We're at the first one.
We're debating whether to review Perek Chaf Dalet first. When did we do Chaf Dalet? Last year, right?
It's been a while.
Chaf Dalet was last year, correct? The story of David and Shaul in the cave? That was last year, right?
Yes,
that wasn't this year.
Yes, it was not
that
this
was last
year.
All right, we're going to review it, but we're going to let's going to do Chaf Vav first. Now, Chaf Vav starts in Pasuk Aleph.
It usually does.
I was waiting for the response to that. Okay, waiting for the response to that.
I thought it's a trick question.
It's a trick question. So, yeah, it is a trick question, and the reason why it's a trick question is because if you look at the perek, if it's easier to see the problem in a Koran style Tanakh that has the paragraph breaks,
mm-hmm.
but if you notice, the paragraph break is one verse too early. Can you see that?
Mm-hmm.
So the last verse of Perek Chaf Hey, can't get rid of Perek Chaf Hey. The last verse of Perek Chaf Hey, which is the story of Shaul giving Michal to Palti ben Laish, which is what we spent some time talking about last time we met, is actually the first sentence of the new paragraph. Remember, chapter divisions and paragraph divisions operate differently, right? Chapter divisions are not of Jewish origin. The paragraph divisions are the old Masoret of how to divide Tanakh. So fascinatingly, the Masoret puts the story of Palti ben Laish as the beginning of Perek Chaf Vav, or as the beginning of the next story, even though it's really the end of the previous piece. David marries Avigail after he had married Achinoam Israelite, and Michal had already been given away to Palti ben Laish. Remember how we looked at the grammar of that story. So really, the question becomes whether that's part of the story that unfolds now in Perek Chaf Vav. It's possible that they're connected. We'll talk about that in a second. But we start from Pasuk Aleph, Perek Chaf Vav Pasuk Aleph, which is the second sentence in the paragraph. Do you see what I'm driving at?
Yeah.
Shall you look like you're confused?
No, it's not printed that way.
The art scroll may do it differently. Okay. But we're starting with Pasuk Aleph.
I got between the two of you one Kleenex. So.
Sure, no problem. Sure, we'll share the Kleenex. I'm not going there.
Jana wants Kleenex. He wants something in the middle.
We can get another box.
We're good.
Wait, is there a tissue free box?
Nope.
Or
those are the only two boxes in the
bag. Be conservative. That's it.
Last two boxes.
That's it. When they run out, we're in trouble. Okay.
Resort to your
sleep. Now then we'll get another box from the office. Thank you. All right.
The rabbi has connections.
Vayavo hazifim el Shaul hagifa'ata lemor. Perek Chaf Vav. Vayavo hazifim el Shaul hagivata lemor. Halo David mistater begivata chachila al pnei hayishimon. The Ziphites, our old friends. Remember the Ziphites?
No.
Any recollection who they are? Never heard of them? Hmm.
No,
okay.
You did, actually, a long time ago, right?
We're going to have to do a little review today. We spent so much time in Perek Chaf Hey, we've kind of lost sight of the bigger picture.
Are these the ones that pretended they were Jewish?
No. Okay. That's way a long time ago. That's like a different sefer.
There's so many.
No. The Ziphites were only two chapters ago. Okay. Come to Shaul in Giv'ah. Remember, Giv'ah is Shaul's hometown. That's where the Malchus is. And said, David mistater b'givat ha'chachila asher apnei yishimon. David is hiding in Givat ha'chachila, this valley hill in the area of Midbar Zif.
So in, they translate that as a question in English.
That would be weird.
It says does not hide in this translation.
Yeah.
Is does David he not hiding himself?
This is does not hide David himself.
Yeah, well, okay.
It's just interesting.
It's not a question. It's okay. A statement. Okay. These Ephites are up to no good. They are the ones who inform to... They are constantly informing to Shaul on David. David has nothing but trouble from these Ziphites. So let's go back to who they are. So first of all, Midbar Zif. Yeah, Midbar Zif. This is where David is in Midbar Zif. This is where he is. I'm going to hand these back to you if you don't already have one. That's an old map, old friend of ours.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So if you remember, this is that map where, of all the events of David's travels.
Back and forth.
We've had this many times, where we were up to, if you look at the very top, you look at the numbers, you can see where sort of the various events, 1, 2, 3, David in Shaul's palace, then in Yavus, then in Gigat, we went to Achish Melech Gat, and then he went to Ammon, stops in number 5, Marat Adullam, where he collects the 300 men, then he goes all the way out to 6, which is on the far right bottom corner where he transfers his parents to the land of Moab, then 7, the Mitzadah, then 8 is back to Ki'ilah where he goes to liberate the city of Ki'ilah, and the people are going to inform on him to Shaul, so he runs all the way back to Midbar Ma'on. You see that?
Number 9.
Okay, Midbar Ma'on. Midbar Ma'on, he has an encounter with Shaul. That was the famous encounter where he and Shaul were on opposite sides of this hill and they were kind of circling each other, and at the very last second Shaul was in grasp of David, and then he got called away because the Plishtim were attacking, so he had to run up north. Okay, that's the story of Midbar Ma'on. We'll come back to that in a second. And then he runs to En Gedi, hides in the caves of En Gedi, and there in the caves of En Gedi, Shaul is again informed as to where David is hiding. That's where you have the famous story of David Shaul in the cave. Remember that story?
Yeah.
Okay, that's Perek of Dalet. We're going to review that Perek because it's a very important Perek for us. And then from there, after Shaul had promised David that he would never pursue him again, we find ourselves moving to the area of 11 and 12. You see that map?
Mm-hmm.
Back to the Mitzadah. And then 12 is Carmel and Ma'on. That's the story of Nevala Carmeli that we just did in Perek Chafei. You should be very familiar with that Perek. And then 13 is Midbar Zif, which is where we are right now. It's the last story before, if you follow the line from 13 to 14, the last story before David goes back to escape Shaul in Midbar in Gat by Eretz Plishtim.
Where's 14? I don't see that.
Here,
back to
God.
Oh,
we're back to God.
Back to Plishtim.
Right.
It's ironic.
That's the next parak. That's parak of Zion. We go back to the Plishtim. We'll talk about that at length. Now, why are the Ziphites so important for us? So let's just do a quick turn the page back. We're gonna finish this parak today. Believe that. We're gonna actually read through this parak. But I just the Ziphites are really important for us. So let's go back to parak of Gimel. I want to just do a quick review of the two major episodes prior to the story of Nevala Carmeli. So, Perek of Gimel, starting with Pasuk Yud Tet. This is the story of Midbar Ma'on, where David and Shaul are on opposite sides of that hill, and they're pursuing each other. That story starts as follows. I'm reading now in Perek of Gimel, Pasuk Yud Tet.
355.
Ve'alu zifim el Shaul ha-givata lemor. The Ziphites went to Shaul and Giva, saying, Halo David mistater imanu b'mtsadot b'chosha b'givat ha-chachila asher miyemina yishimon. David is hiding in the fortresses in the valley of Chachila, near or to the right of the area of Yishimon.
Does Chachila have any meaning?
It's a name of a place, but this verse is a very interesting verse. Why?
It sounds exactly like the one we
It's almost identical. The only difference is that there it's Asher Miyamina Yishimon, and here it's Asher Apnei Yishimon, because David has moved from the coast to the center of Midbar Zif. So he's now Apnei Yishimon instead of Asher Miyamina Yishimon. But other than that, it is the identical verse. These Ziphites are the ones who informed on David back in Perek Chaf Gimel. And the result was Pasuk Chaf, Ha'ata l'cholavat nafshecha ha'melech l'redet red, v'lanu hazgiru b'yad ha'melech. Why don't you come down and come and we will hand him over to you. V'yom ha'shu b'chim atem la'ashem ki chamaltem alai. They are loyal to Shaul. Shaul blesses them. L'chu na'achinu odu l'u l'u et mekomo ha'shetie raglo mi'ra'au sham ki amar alai arom yarimu. Shaul doesn't quite trust him. He wants to know more information. He knows that David is hiding somewhere, but he needs to know exactly where. And so they, in fact, find him. Pasuk of Dalet, Vayakumu, Vayachu Zifa, Lifnei Shaul, Vadavid, Vanashab, Mimidbar, Ma'on, Baraval, Yemina, Yishimon, Vayelach Shuv, Anashav, Vakesh, Vayagidu, David, Vayered, Asela, Vayeshib, Mimidbar, Ma'on. David heard, and so he ran ahead to this Sela, and they end up in this encounter on Sela, Mimidbar, Ma'on. They're on each side of the mountain. David David is running faster, but Shaul and his people on a pincer attack split up and are on either side about to engage him. In the meantime, a messenger came to Shaul and said, you know what, Shaul, you're needed elsewhere. You and your army, the resources down here in the south to catch David, it's very nice, but in the meantime, the Plishtim are wreaking havoc up north. We need you there. Vayashev Shaul mirdof achrei David vayelech likrat Plishtim. So at that moment, Shaul withdraws from his pursuit of David, and they call the name of the place Sela HaMachlokot, the divided rock. And we talked about what that means. At that point, David moves and he goes to the fortresses of En Gedi. That was Perek of Gimel.
There's no thing about Malach.
Malach meaning the messenger.
Like, if you were a religious person, you could think it was an angel.
Nah, the word Malach, you have to remember, the word Malach in Tanakh is a messenger.
It's never.
It can be, but it's often, very often used as a messenger.
Because I'm just saying, it did say that. The person did say them.
Yeah, but that's... The word malach is just a normal word for a messenger. Perech of Dalet. Vahi kasher shav Shaul me'acharei plishtim. After the battle with the plishtim was over, vayagidu lo lemor inei David b'midbar En Gedi. A second time, Shaul is informed to the location of David in En Gedi. Here it does not tell us who informed on David to Shaul. I'm going to take a wild guess.
Zifim?
I'm going to assume it's the Zifim. Why?
They seem like they're spies for him.
Well, they did it in Perech of Gimel. They do it again in Perech of Vav. It's not unreasonable to assume that these guys are loyal to David. And every time David turns to Shaul, and every time David turns around, they inform. Let's just do one more. Pasuk in Perek Chav Dalet, Veikach Shaul Shloshet Alafim Ish Bachur Mikol Yisrael. So Shaul took 3,000 of the choicest of Israel. Vayelach Levakesh Et David VaAnashav Apnei Tzurei Yelim. And he went to find David in the place in the hills of En Gedi. And that's where the story of David Shaul in the cave begins. He comes to the cave, and he went into the cave to do his private things. And David and his people are back in the cave, and he comes up. Remember that story, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's now return our attention. We're going to come back to Chav Dalet and read it again in a few minutes. But let's come back to Perek Chavav and jump into our Perek. So back to 26, Perek Chavav, Pasuk Aleph. I'm going to skip Chafei. Chafei I don't need to reread Chafei. Chafei, we've spent the last 9 classes discussing. Move to Chafav. Vayavo hazifim el Shaul hagivata lemor. The zifim, again, come to Shaul in Givah, saying, Hello, David mistater begivata chachila apnei Shimon. David is hiding. Is David not hiding? However you want to read it. In Givat Chachila Asher apnei Yishimon, which is the area known as Midbazif, on your chart, it's number 13, right in the heartland of just southeast of Hebron. Vayakam Shaul vayered el Midbazif. Shaul arose, went down to Midbazif, ve'ito shloshet alafim ish b'churei Yisrael. Together with 3,000 choice soldiers of Israel. Interesting
same
number.
3,
same 3,000. Whether it's the exact same people or not, I don't know, but it's the same number. You sort of get the impression that Shaul has a kind of special force army that's made up of 3,000 soldiers. Because every time he comes to runs after David, he brings 3,000 men. I'm just assuming that it's some special platoon just that is made up of 3,000 men, and he keeps taking his special service forces. Special force. Levakeshet David b'midbazif. He is running after David in Midbazif, and of course you have to ask yourself the obvious question, which is,
why couldn't those people just get him and take him to Shaul?
Well, that wasn't the obvious question I was thinking about, but that's okay, that's a good question too. But I was thinking more along the lines of, didn't Shaul promise David that he would give up the fight?
Oh,
right? The end of Perek of Dalet, if you remember the story of the cave?
Yeah.
What was the last thing Shaul and David said to each other?
They made peace.
They made peace, they hugged, they cried. David said, I'm a bug, I'm a cockroach to you. I'm not going to kill you. I'm only want peace with you. And Shaul says, that's a terrible thing I've been doing. And I know you only want. You're going to be the king of Israel. Remember back in Perek of Dalet. Suddenly, right, the Perek of Hay in the middle, but otherwise it's pretty much suddenly, Shaul is
back to his old ways.
Back to his old ways. So that's a question in the back of our minds, what happened to flip the switch on Shaul? But in the meantime, back to the story. Vayichan Shaul begivat hachila asher apnei Yishimon al haderech. So Shaul went and he camped in exactly this place, givat hachila Yishimon. V'David yoshev b'midbar. And David is in the midbar. In the previous encounter, he was in a cave, he was in Engedi, he was in Mitzadah, he was hiding. David is in Naval HaKarmeli, was in the middle of the Carmel, was in the middle of Ma'on, was in the middle of the populated center of Shevet Yehudah. So David is no longer encamped in a cave, hiding in a cave. Right? David is out in the... He's got an entourage, he's got an army, he's protecting people, he's taking taxes. You know, David is operating in very much in the open at this point in time. Vayar kiba Shaul acharav midbar. He discovered that Shaul and his forces are coming after him in the midbar. This is a new development. Vayishlach David miraglim. So David sends spies. He's got an army. Got an army, you also have your own special forces, and he sent spies to find out what's Shaul's intent. Remember, the last encounter they had was peaceful.
In the cave.
Vayeda kiba Shaul nachon. And he realized that this is in fact the case. Shaul has come with his army, and he's encamped there, and he's in trouble. Vayakom David vayavo al makom asher chana sham Shaul. David arose and he moves. He comes to the place where Shaul is encamped. So Shaul has got his entire army, all 3,000 of them, encamped in a valley, military camp, in the middle of the night. And David, looking over from the hill, he sees where Shaul is sleeping. Now, whether they're sleeping under the stars, or whether they're sleeping in a tent, and he sees the tent of the command tent, or not, I can't speak to either one. I think it's more likely that Shaul is in a tent rather than sleeping out in the stars, but you never know. Be that as it may, David sees from afar. The Avner ben Ner Sar Tzva'o, together with his general. Who is his general? Avner ben Ner. We have seen Avner ben Ner. That is Shaul's general. V'Shaul shochev b'ma'agal v'ha'am chonim svivotav. They're encamped in concentric circles. Right, a military camp, 3,000 men. Where do you put the king?
Middle.
In the middle, most protected place. You ever play Stratego? Where do you put the flag? In the middle, surrounded by bombs, right? You put the king in the middle. Vayan David vayomer el Achimelech Achiti vel Avishai ben Tsruya Achi Yoav lemor. So David turns to his special commandos, namely Achimelech Achiti and Avishai ben Tsruya, brother of Yoav. Anybody know who these people are?
Yeah, we know who Avishai ben Tsruya.
Yoav ben Tsruya. Where do you know Yoav ben Tsruya from?
Wasn't he like the last remaining relative that was left alive?
Isn't that his sister? Avishai's his nephew.
How do you know that?
I told him.
Oh, I told him. Oh, man. That's such a giveaway. That's such a letdown. I told
him. Family,
and this is the one remaining.
He lost
his parents.
Maybe his brother was with him.
Maybe his brothers too. He probably lost his sister. Maybe lost his sister too. Avishai and Yoav will come up again. They are both mentioned later in Sefer Shmuel. Yoav will become David's general. But Avner ben Ner is to Shaul. Yoav ben Tsruya will be to David. Okay.
I actually remember that one.
But Yoav ben Tsruya does not become David's general until after the battle for Yerushalayim in Shmuel Bet Perakei, which is led by Yoav, and therefore Yoav is chosen as the general.
That could be a year from now.
Okay. Yoav ben Tsruya and Avishai ben Tsruya Achi Yoav are both B'nai Tsruya, and you are correct, in Sefer Divrei Hayamim, it says that Tsruya is David's sister.
Maybe
it's possible. Okay, either way. There's actually a contradiction between two different psukim as to who Tsruya is. We'll talk about that. But it's also fascinating that Avishai ben Tsruya, because it's not the fact that Tsruya is David's sister is not mentioned here. So if it's in fact the case, then it means that Avishai and Yoav are both identified by the name of their mother, not their father, which is also unique.
That's why I remembered it.
All right? Which is unique.
Impressed me.
Right? And Achimelech Achiti. So here, text tells me that David turned to his three people, Achimelech, Avishai, and Yoav. The problem with this verse, and we're going to look at this verse in much greater detail, not today, but another class, is that neither Achimelech nor Avishai, nor for that matter Yoav, are ever mentioned before this verse. Nor will Achimelech ever be mentioned after. Meaning, this is the only reference we have to him. Now, the problem here is that all it says is that David turned to Achimelech Achiti, Avishai ben Tsruya, Achi Yoav, saying, "Mi yerediti al Shaul al Machaneh." Okay, who's coming with me into the camp? I'm going down to the camp to Shaul. Who's coming with me? Vayomer Avishai ani yeredi mach. And Avishai says, "I'll go." Avishai volunteers. Achimelech does not volunteer. Yoav does not volunteer. But that's all we know about this story. So it's a very strange introduction to three people who we've never encountered before, one of whom we'll never encounter again. It's kind of this by the by, like as if we are expected to know who this is. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
So this Achimelech is a mystery, and we're going to spend some time figuring out who this Achimelech is. So I just put that out there for now. But David turns to these three people, Achimelech, Avishai, and Yoav, offers any one of them to accompany him on this mission. Do we know what this mission is yet? Textually, do we know what this mission is?
No.
He's going to go down to Shaul. He doesn't tell us why. So Avishai volunteers. Vayavod David va'Avishai el ha'am laila. David and Avishai come down to the camp in the middle of the night. V'nei Shaul shochev yashen b'ma'agal. V'chanito mu'ucha ba'aretz mira shotav. Shaul is sleeping in a circle, meaning all people around him, and had his head dug into the ground is his spear. Shaul is never mentioned without his spear. This spear has been with Shaul from day one. It's the same spear that Shaul threw at David twice. It's the same spear he's used in every battle. Every time Shaul is mentioned, v'chanito biyado. Okay, his spear is with him. This spear has a unique relationship with Shaul. It's kind of like King Arthur's sword. You know, it's kind of this mythical picture. Chanit of Shaul. The Avner ve'am shuchim svivotav. And surrounding them are Avner and his men. So you can imagine, to get to Shaul, that means that they have to traverse the entire camp. This is not an easy mission. Right? This is a very stealth mission in the middle of the night. And David offered it to everyone, one of his men was willing to come along for the ride. And one volunteered. I don't think he wanted more than one. It's too dangerous a mission to go with a group of three. You just keep it small. Pasukhet. Vayomer Avishai el David. Avishai turns to David and he says, Sigar alokim ayomet oyivcha biyadecha. God has handed your enemy over into your hands today. V'yata akenuna b'chanit uva'aretz pam achat v'lo eshnelo. I will drive this spear through his head and into the ground. One shot. I don't have to do it twice. Pam achat lo eshnelo. David, he says, give me one shot. Take the spear. In one fell swoop. Now, why is it important that it be in one fell swoop? To quote Shakespeare.
That he doesn't suffer.
Oh, I don't think Avishai could care less if Shaul suffered, honestly.
Well, so that he won't be able to cry out.
Right.
He'll just be
if he misses, or if he doesn't kill him in that one shot, right, then he cries out and he alerts the whole camp. This is a stealth mission. You want to kill Shaul, and you want to do it with his own weapon, which is even more ironic. You need one powerful blow that's going to kill him. And so Avishai says, Avishai is a big man, and he says, "Akenuna b'chanit uba'aretz." Now, what does b'chanit uba'aretz mean? With the spear and into the ground, meaning. Do you remember when Shaul threw the spear at David? So the second time he threw it, actually the phrase is very interesting. It's in Perek Yutet Pasuk Yud. Take a quick glance. Perek Yutet Pasuk Yud.
349.
Vayvakesh Shaul Lahakot Bachanit B'David Uvakir.
Kind of like you pinned them to it.
He wanted to throw the spear in such a way to hit David, but it was thrust with such energy that it would go through David and into the wall. Right? But David Ubakir. What does Avishai say? That's exactly the expression Avishai uses. Akenuna bachanit uva aretz. Pamachat velo eshnelo. Give me the spear, I will drive it through his head and into the ground. One shot. We'll need a second. And we're done. After all, what did David take Avishai with him to do?
Kill him.
If not to, ostensibly to kill Shaul. Vayomer David el Avishai. I'm back to our verse. Vayomer David el Avishai. Al tashchiteo. Don't harm him. Ki mishalach yado b'mashiach Hashem v'nika. Who could possibly lay their finger against the anointed one of God and be absolved of it and be exonerated in the eyes of God?
It's the same attitude that he had before when he cut off part of his garment.
So we're going to clarify that in a second. It's the same attitude that he had after he cut off the garment. Right? Remember, we had a whole discussion about why he cut off the garment. But yes, same end result. Vayomer David, Chai Hashem, ki Hashem mikafenu. Such a person who lays his finger against the Mashiach Hashem, against the Anointed One of God, by the living God, God will smite him down. Ki im Hashem mikafenu. Or you'll be destroyed in battle, or he'll, day will come. This is not for us to touch. God forbid that I would lay a hand against Mashiach Hashem. So now, if you're Avishai, what's going through your head?
Why are they going there?
Why am I here if not to kill the Mashiach Hashem? Yeah. Like, what did you bring me here for, right?
Yeah. I could be sleeping.
Pazigad Aleph, Ve'ata, says David to Avishai, Kach na tachanit Hashem mirashotav, Vetzapachata mayim v'nilchalan. Take his spear, take his water flask, and let's go. We're taking it, we're not using it. Vayikach David et achanit v'tzapachata mayim mirashotei Shaul v'yachulen. So David took the chanit, and he took the water flask from the place at David's head, Shaul's head, and they left. Ve'ein ro'eh, ve'ein yodea, ve'ein mikitz. Nobody saw, nobody knew, nobody awoke. They're all sleeping. Ki kulam yishenim. Ki tardemat Hashem nafla aleihem.
They were
overwhelmed with a intense slumber. A godly slumber. And a godly slumber can either mean an intense slumber, or it can mean a God-provoked, induced slumber, which I think is the reference here, right? This is the notion of siyat d'shmaya that accompanies David's life. Observation. Who did David instruct to take the chanit from Shaul's head? Who took the chanit from the Avishai's head? From Shaul's head?
David.
You notice that?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll come back to that. Pasuk Gimel. Ve'yavor David ha'ever. Ve'yamod al rosh ha'har merachok. David takes it, walks up the hill. Now he's standing on the top of the mountain, overlooking the camp. You have to ask yourself, why would a camp, an army, go to sleep in the middle of a valley, in the low point, surrounded by mountains that are your strategic advantage? I mean, just strategically, a stupid place to think.
But how come no one's awake guarding, period? Doesn't it seem strange?
I guess the guards fell asleep.
Yeah.
Rav Hamakom Benehem. There's a distance between them. David separates himself physically from the rest of the camp, and now he's standing on the hillside, and he calls out, booming voice. Vayikra David al ha'am, vel Avner ben Ner lemor. Wakes them all up. Calls out to the people and to Avner ben Ner. He addresses Avner. Why?
He didn't protect his king.
Right. Because Avner is guilty of treason for not having protected his king.
Yeah,
he slipped houses. Halot ta'aneh Avner. Answer me, Avner. Vayan Avner vayomer, mi ata karata el ha-melech. Who are you that you call out to the king? Right, he doesn't recognize his voice. Mephoshim are bothered by the contradiction. On the one hand, David called out to Avner, and on the other hand, Avner's response is, "Who are you that you call out to the king? Mi ata ki ata ne el ha-melech, karata el ha-melech." So some suggested that the assumption is that if you've called out to Avner, it's because you're trying to get to the king, and he's the middle, he's your gatekeeper to the king. One of the more creative interpretations is I can't remember if it's Radak or one of them suggests that you have to sparse the phrase. Vayomer, miata karata, who are you that call out? Comma. And then to his people he proclaimed, Elamelech, quickly, to the king, right? To protect the king. I don't think it's pshat. It certainly doesn't match the trup. Right? Miata karata Elamelech is the trup, but be that as it may. Vayomer David Alevner. He turns to Avner and he says, Hello, Ishata? Are you a man? Meaning, what kind of a soldier are you? Umi chamocha b'Yisrael. Who is like you in Israel? V'lema lo shemarta l'adonecha ha-melech? How dare you not protect your king? Ki va'achad ha'am la'shchit et ha-melech adonecha. So nobody could have walked into the camp to kill your king. Lo tov ha-davar hazeh asher asita. This that you have done is terrible. Chai Hashem by the living God. Ki b'nei mavet atem. Asher lo shemartem al adonechem ha-mashiach Hashem. You are all guilty of death penalty for not having protected the anointed one of God. Ve'ata, re'ei. Eichanit ha-melech. Ve'tzapachat ha-melech ha-mayim Hashem min ha-shotav. Tell me, Avner, where's the king's spear? And where's the king's water flask? Uh-oh. Oh, where's the king's spear? Vayaker Shaul et kol David. Shaul at this point woke up, and he hears the conversation, and he recognizes David's voice. Vayomer, hakolcha ze b'ni David. Is that your voice I hear, my son David? Vayomer David, Koli Adoni HaMelech, my master the king, yes, this it is my voice. And then David gets to his punchline. Vayomer, Lama ze Adoni rodef acharei avdo? Why does my master pursue his servant? Ki me'asiti, uma v'yati ra'ah? What have I done? What crime have I committed? V'yata yishmana Adoni HaMelech et divrei avdo? Let my master hear the message of his servant. Im Hashem esitcha bi, if God has inspired you against me, yarach mincha, bring an offering to God, appease God, do something, but this is unacceptable. Vim b'nei Adam, and it is man who has enticed you to pursue me, arurim em lifnei Hashem, let them be cursed before God. Ki gershuni ayom istapech benachalat Hashem lemor lechavod olhim acharim. You have forced me into exile from the land of God, from the land of the inheritance of God, forcing me to go into worshipping idols and worshipping idolatrous nations by running out of the land of Israel. V'yata al yipol da mi'arza mineget ne Hashem. Ki yetza melech Yisrael levakesh et par'osh echad kashir dof hakore be'arim. Let my blood not be spilled before God. You, the king, have come to pursue nothing more than a flea, a bug, a cockroach compared to the king, like a bird pursues its prey on the mountaintops. Vayomer Shaul, Chatati, Shaul says, I have sinned. Shuv b'ni David, my son David, come, return to me. Lo, ki lo ara lacha od, I will not harm you ever again. Tachat ashiyakra nafshi b'enecha yom hazeh, because your soul is dear to me today. Hinei skalti ve'eshge harbei ma'od. I have been foolish. I have made many mistakes. Eshge, shkot, shogeg. Vayan David Vayomer Hinei Chanit HaMelech. David takes out the spear and he says, here it is, the king's spear. V'yavor echad me'anarim v'yikachea. One of his lads comes, he takes the spear and the water. V'Hashem yashiv la'ish tzidkato v'et emunato shenatancha Hashem ayom b'yad v'lo aviti l'shloach yadi b'mashiach Hashem. let God repay me, because I refused to lay my hand against the Mashiach Hashem. I had the chance, I refused to do it. Here I'm returning to you the water and the flask and the spear. V'inei kasher godlan nafshecha yom hazeh be'enai, as your status elevated in my eyes, ken tigdal nafshi b'enei Hashem, so shall my status, my soul, be elevated in the eyes of God. V'yatzileni mikol tzara, as I spared you, let God spare me. V'yomer Shaul al David, baruch ata b'ni David, blessed are you, my son David. Gamasol ta'aseh v'gam yachol tuchal, you shall be successful, you shall be victorious. V'yelech David ledarko, v'Shaul shav limkomo. David went on his journey, Shaul returned to his home. That's Perek Vav, and just as a kind of an introduction to where this goes, Perek Zayin begins, Vayomer David alibo, David turns to himself and he says, Ata esafer yom echad biyad Shaul. The day is going to come when I am going to fall into the hands of Shaul. I can't do this anymore. How many times can I expect to escape? Ein li tov ki imalet, imalet el eretz plishtim. I have no choice but to escape into the land of the plishtim. V'na'ash mimeni Shaul levaksheni od b'chol gvul Yisrael, minim latetim yado. So finally, Shaul will eventually give up from seeking me in the land of Israel, because I won't be in the land of Israel. I have to run to Eretz Plishtim, which is what he referred to earlier when he said, Ki gershuni ayom istapech b'nachalat Hashem, today you have forced me to run into exile, meaning he's already in his head realized that this is the last straw, and from here he has nowhere to go except into exile. And that's the beginning of the next part of the story of David, which is David in Eretz Plishtim. All right.
Do you have any idea if Shaul really is sincere, if he's really, his words are sincere words to him?
I mean, you can answer that question as well as I could. I have no idea, except that there's only so many times that Shaul has promised David that he'll never harm him again.
His personality is so up and down, up and down.
Right.
So maybe.
Okay, so can you trust him?
Yeah.
I mean, does he mean it? I think he does.
Mm-hmm.
But
does he
has
what he says that you mean?
Yeah.
But that's a fleeting thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I suspect it's fleeting because, well, so for several reasons. First of all, we know that he suffers emotionally and psychologically. And second of all, there's this constant reference of Ruach Hashem Ra'ah, Ruach Ra'ah. Right? Mm-hmm. Every time he gets afraid, he gets paranoid, and paranoia is a clinical condition. Right? So I don't know. But I suspect he means it sincerely. Just David will only take it in the moment.
But David doesn't believe it because he says he's going to go to Plishtim.
Right. He doesn't even believe it. He just can't trust it.
No, I'm saying
he can't trust in it.
I'm saying he doesn't, can't count on it.
He can't count on it. You know, there's always the question of why David runs after Shaul. Why Shaul runs after David again when he promised he wouldn't do it? Correct? He promised him back off the island. So, cynically, you could always say, well, he promised he wouldn't pursue David, but he never promised to keep his promise.
Oh, my God. That's,
with all this running back and forth, I don't think that's the case. There's no Navi for David.
There is, but you don't hear of him at all. Right? David is constantly accompanied by three Navim at different stages of his life.
So he actually has a Navi with him right this second?
We saw him back in Mitzuda Masada. His name is Gad.
Oh, right.
Like God accompanies him throughout his journey. Mm-hmm. Natan accompanies him in Yerushalayim. His two primary Nevi'im that accompany him through his time as Melech are God in all of his before Yerushalayim, and then Natan in Yerushalayim. God appears twice. Once we saw him earlier in when he told him to leave the stronghold and move into Shevet Yudah and go and save the people of Keilah. And the other time we'll see him is at the end of Shmuel Bet. There's a series of prakim that are out of place chronologically. They're much earlier.
Mm.
They are a list of all the Giborei David, the end of Shmuel Bet. Shirat David is there. There's a whole bunch of prakim there. The story of David counting his army and making the mistake of counting him in the midst of Magepha, which is the story that leads to the choice, to the discovery of the place for the Beit HaMikdash. The Navi in that story is God. David famous pasuk can we say Tachnun, that's all part of that story.
So do you think God's advising him that he has to leave?
Possibly. Possibly. No, we don't know.
Because then he also goes in exile.
Who?
God. Doesn't God go with him?
I would assume so. I would assume so. All right. So where does this leave us? It's an extraordinary tale. It's quite a story, right?
I don't know how I missed it all those years ago. I don't know.
The power of this story lies, number one, in David's engagement with Shaul. But the other piece of the story that's so extraordinary is the remarkable parallel this story has to Perek Chof Dalet. Let me paint you a picture for a second. Okay? Imagine for a moment I tell you the following story. I'm going to give you a synopsis of a parak in Tanakh. Shaul endures many years trying to pursue, or months trying to pursue David, is informed by the Ziphites that Shaul is hiding. And he's informed exactly where David is hiding. He's informed exactly where David is. So he takes 3,000 soldiers and he runs after David. Shaul and David find themselves in a position where David has the opportunity to take advantage of Shaul and to kill him and remove the burden of his pursuer forever. And in fact, his men encourage him to do just that. David decides that it's inappropriate to lay one's hand against the Anointed One of God, and instead takes something from Shaul that he can use to prove his innocence. After that encounter, David then faces Shaul in public, brings out the item that he took, and uses it to prove that he had the opportunity to kill Shaul, and he refused to do so, and that clearly Shaul is pursuing him unjustly, and that Shaul is the Mashiach Hashem and David himself is nothing more than a parosh, a flea or a bug compared to the king. The king is so moved that he refers to David as my son, Kolcha Zebeni, this your voice, my son, that he realizes that he's done a terrible thing, and he promises David that he will never again pursue him. David and Shaul part company, and lived happily ever after. What have I just described?
Both scenarios.
I've described the parak we just read.
And the one in the
and
cave.
Without exception, literally, word for word, I described the story of David in the cave. Two stories that are extraordinarily similar. Not only are they similar in terms of the events of Shaul and David, they're similar in language. How many soldiers does Shaul take?
3,000.
How many soldiers did he take back in Perek Chof Dalet? 3,000. Who informed on him in Perek Chof Vav? The Ziphites. Who informed them in Perek Chof Dalet? Technically it doesn't say, but in Perek Chof Gimel it was the Ziphites. Right. And you can go on and on. In fact, I prepared for you, just to make life fun. Here, take one of these and pass them down. Let's put it up in a little chart of all of the points of comparison between Perek Chof Gimel and Perek Chof Vav. Sorry, Perek Chof Dalet and Perek Chof Vav. Let's do let's look at it in the text for a second. Let's turn back to Perek Chof Dalet for a second. We don't have to do the whole parak, just pieces. Perek Chof Dalet, we already read the first two psukim. Mekach Shaul et 3,000 ish bachur v'kol yisov v'yelach l'vakesh et David v'anashav al pnei tzur ha'yelim. They came to a certain place. There was a cave. Shaul entered the cave to do what he needed to do. And David and his people are in the back of the cave. This is the day God said, He would give you your enemies into your hands, said his people to him. David arose, cut off the corner of David's garment, of Shaul's garment, secretly. David smitten by remorse and guilt for having taken the garment of the king. God forbid that I shall do this thing. L'Adoni, l'Mashiach Hashem, to my master, the anointed of God, l'shloach yadibo, ki Mashiach Hashem, he is the anointed of God. He prevented his people from attacking Shaul. Shaul came from the Arava Yelach Badarach. Shaul got up and left the cave. Vayakom David Achrechen, David arose afterwards. Vayetze min ha-ma'ara, vayikral chavei Shaul lemo, Adoni ha-melech. And he calls out to Shaul, and he calls out, and he says, Adoni ha-melech, my master, the king. Vayabed Shaul acharav, Shaul turned around. Vayikod David ha-paymarza, David is bowing down to him. Vayomer David al Shaul, lama tishma tivrei adam lemor, inei David mevakshei ra'atecha. Why do you listen to the people who say to you, David is trying to kill you? God had given you into my hands in the cave. The people told me to kill you. I had compassion on you. I said, I won't harm you because you are the anointed of God. My father, see. Look at the corner of the cloak that I have in my hands. The fact that I was able to cut off your garment and not kill you. No, that means that I bear no harm, no ill will to you. God shall judge between us. I won't harm you. Then in Yudalit he says, Achramiyat Samelach Israel, after whom are you pursuing, King of Israel? Achramiyat Arodev, who are you chasing after? Achrei Kelev Met, Achrei Parosh Echad. I'm nothing more than a bug. Pasuk Tetzayin, Vahik Chalot David, Adabert, Adrim Eil, Shuv, Yomer Shaul, after David said his piece, Shaul turned and he said, Hakol chaze b'ni David? Is that your voice, my son David? And he began to cry. Vayomel David tzadika tamimeni. You are more righteous than me. Ki ata gmaltani tova v'ani gmalti chara'a. You paid me with kindness and I repay you with evil. And the rest of this, of course, he gives him a bracha and he says to him that he knows that he will eventually become king. The story is extraordinarily parallel. Extraordinarily similar. And I just, what I did on this chart is I gave you phrases that appear in both contexts. Ve'elu zifim. Ve'yom alo David mistater imanu. Which is exactly the same phrase. Ve'evo azifim oshul l'givata l'mor alo David mistater b'givata chachila. Shaul runs after him with Shloshet Alafim Ish Bachu Yisrael, Vayelech Levakesh David, to pursue David with 3,000 soldiers. Vayakom David, Vayichrot et Knaf HaMe'il, David arose to cut off the garment of David of Shaul. Similarly here, Vayakom David, Vayvol HaMakom, David arose to go down to the place. Even the people of David, right, his men who want to kill Shaul, who say to Shaul, David, that Inei Yom Asher Amar Hashem Elecha Inei Anochi Notenet Oyivcha Biyadecha. It's the same phrase. Vayomer Rabbi Yisrael David Sigar Olikim Ayom Et Oyivcha Biyadecha. Exactly the same phrase. David's rationale for not killing Shaul, Mashiach Hashem, twice in Perek Chaf Dalet, three times in Perek Chaf Vav. David, who takes something from Shaul, the Knaf Me'il on the one hand, the Chanit and the Tzepachat Amayim on the other. David, who presents the argument that his that he could have killed Shaul and does not, because that's proof that he harbors no ill will towards Shaul. Even the king's response, HaKolcha Zeh B'ni David. Same response. My son, at your voice. David compares himself to a parosh. How common is that? And of course, Shaul, who himself recognizes that he has sinned, that he has done a terrible injustice, he says to David, Sadika Tamimeni. Here he says, Chatati. It's really an extraordinary parallel. It's so similar that it has become one of the great polemics in the debate between biblical scholarship and biblical criticism.
Well, the scholars say was that it is the same story that
you know, the critics, that. Right? The biblical critics is a genre of biblical scholarship, academic scholarship that denies the religious foundation of Tanakh and authorship, and is sort of the foundation of the theory that Tanakh is written by multiple authors, multiple stories, multiple versions, right? The documentary hypothesis type of thing. And the theory that there are multiple sources to Book of Shaul collected from different places, and that these are simply two sources to tell the same story. And that somehow they both made it into the book. But they're the same story, they're just told from two different sources and therefore two different sets of details. But ultimately it's the same story, we just have two different versions of the story. And of course from a biblical scholarship perspective, Parshanut perspective, that's an untenable thesis. Because at the core of it, it denies the possibility that Tanakh wrote these two stories, the author of the Sefer wrote these two stories intentionally in a manner that would draw our attention to their similarity in order to do what?
To bring out different...
Right, in order to highlight the unique differences between the two. In other words, the foundation of biblical criticism is that if the two stories are similar enough, I just assume that they're two different traditions or versions of the same event, which, of course, we're not going to accept. But that they could be intentionally written in a similar fashion, both occurred, but they could be written in such a way to highlight the parallels and therefore to highlight the contrast. It's just a theory that the world of biblical criticism would never accept, but I think at the core of it, that's what's going on. Now, Chazal were not unaware of the challenge of these two prakim. And Chazal, in the sort of their own midrashic fashion, offered their own solution to how I have two stories of exactly the same fashion. How is it that these two stories occurred literally two prakim apart, and they're almost identical? So, Chazal, in the Medrash, I think I put the Medrash on the bottom of the page.
Mm-hmm.
Kivan shalach lo Shaul, this is a medrash that describes the aftermath of Perek Chaf Dalet, right? After they left the cave. So amulo giborav v'chi b'shvil shelo haragcha b'ma'ara ya tzadik. What, Shaul, you think that because he didn't kill you in the cave, he's so righteous? Yadei yashim ayaselach mu'uma hayin nechlasim v'ochlin oto miyad. We are soldiers. He knew that we are soldiers stood outside the cave. If he would have killed you in the cave, he would have been a dead man, because he'd never have gotten out of the cave alive. So just because he didn't kill you in the cave, that proved that he's such a tzaddik. He beat Vinitire. He just saw that the honor guard was standing outside the cave, and he was afraid to act. He's a coward. He's not a right. So they incited Shaul back. So at that point, Shaul said, okay, let's go back to pursue him. And he pursued him down to Midbazif. And that's when David stood on the top of the mountain and he called out and he said to Avner, "Hey, Avner, what can you answer me now? You yesterday you told your master Shaul that the only reason I didn't kill Shaul was because you were standing outside the cave. And had we killed him, you would have come into the cave and wiped us out. Here I am standing with the spear in his water. Now what are you going to say? Right. So, according to the Medrash, the whole story happens a second time in order to
prove that he's going
to
kill him.
Right, in order to remove the potential argument that his people could have had that David was acting out of his own self-interest. Now, there's a potential flaw in the story of the cave needed to be quote-unquote rectified. And that happened because here in the camp, right, there's certainly no flaw. Right? David is not acting out of his own self-interest. He knows that he's trapped. Right? Here, David was not trapped. He enters into the camp in order to take the spear.
Because the men were so soundly asleep, they weren't going to be attacking
them. Well, David didn't count on that. That happens to just be the way it's described. Mm-hmm. But David can't count on that. The problem with this Medrash, and again, the Medrash is addressing exactly the same issue. I have two stories that are connected. What's the relationship between them? And does so by presenting a kind of a context to understand why it was necessary for chapter 26 to repeat the story of chapter 24. The only problem with the Midrashic answer, of course, is that...
Well, one thing I would say, that I forget where he says it, but he says, let God be your judge, or something like, you know, I'll judge you.
Right.
I'm not going to be the one to kill you.
Right. That's in Perichov Dalet.
And I'm just thinking, like, you go back to Abigail's husband, who dies like a week later after the initial confrontation, and this is going on for like years. Like, how come it took God so long to, like, you know, get rid of Shaul that he said he was going to get rid of?
Well, Shaul is a Mashiach Hashem. It's not so simple. Right? Naval is a Naval. Naval is a Ish Belial. Shaul is the king. Right? Shaul is has got lots of. God is not going to kill Shaul so fast, but I hear. And the problem with the Medrash is simply that it's a conversation that's not in the text, right? Like most Midrashim, the conversation that it describes is not in the text. So if you want to introduce new information, you can go there. But working with just the text, what do we do with the same question? What is the relationship between Perichov Dalet and Perichov Vav? And the answer, of course, lies in trying to understand what's changed between the two stories and what is the difference between them that highlights the role of Shaul and the role, more importantly, of David. Because while they are similar, they're also different. And so I'm going to take it apart piece by piece. So let's start, in the 7 minutes we have left, let's start with the easy one, which is Shaul. What's changed in Shaul? Why did Shaul at the end of Perichov Dalet say, "My son, you're right, you're righteous, I'm evil, I did bad, tzadik ata mimeni," and then suddenly he's back to pursuing David? What's changed in his demeanor between Perichov Dalet and Perichov Vav? So again, the Medrash has this depiction of the conversation that Avner and his men have with Shaul. But leaving that conversation out of the picture for a second, what can we point to in the story that could possibly explain why Shaul has had a, quote, change of heart?
Because he got married to two
women? So one possibility is the marriages, right? The marriage of David to Achinoam and Abigail has upset Shaul so much that he went and he married Michal off to Palti ben Laish and then went back to pursue David. And there is evidence to that. What's the evidence? Even though I don't think that's pshat, but I think that there's some evidence to that interpretation. Number one, it's right after, and number two,
the thing about Michal marrying the other guys is like the next sentence after.
Right. In other words, in the Parshiot division, Shaul's marriage or marrying off Michal to Palti ben Laish is the first sentence of this next paragraph, which is the story of our parak. Meaning, the division of chapters takes the story of Michal and Palti ben Laish and puts it at the end of the previous chapter. The division of paragraphs puts it at the beginning of the story, as if to say, in reaction to David marrying Abigail and Ahinoam, Shaul went and married Michal off to Palti ben Laish and then went to pursue David. You see, because that's where the paragraph break puts it. The paragraph puts V'Shaul natan et Michal bito eshet David lepalti ben Laish Hashem megalim v'yavo azifim Shaul givata lemor alo David mistater b'givata chachila.
Is that because him marrying the two women signified that he's a king?
No, I think it was just yeah. Like, okay, you were married to my daughter and now you went and married somebody else. How dare you? The problem is, I don't think it works in the pshat of the story, because the timetable's all off.
Yeah, you said that.
Right. The timetable in the language of the text, David marries Avigayo, then the text tells me in pasuk mem gimel that Achinoam lakach David miYisrael, and you have to translate correctly. Past perfect tense, lakach David means that David had already married Achinoam. And v'Shaul natan et Michal, Shaul had married Michal off to Palti ben Laish, meaning these are previous events that are recorded here just in order to fill in the picture of all of the issues related to David's wives. But the actual event that is taking place here is just the marriage to Avigail. The marriage to Achinoam is earlier, and the marriage of Michal to Palti ben Laish is even earlier than that. So they're really unrelated to what's going on here. So, come back to my question. What has triggered Shaul to abandon his promises to David in Perek Chav Dalet and pursue David again in Perek Chav Vav? The Zifim went and informed on him, but if he was really loyal to his promise to David, he would have said, okay, Zifim, that's very nice, but I promised David, I trust him, I'm not going after him. Right? What's changed?
He took another wife.
Is he afraid of him now? More afraid of him now because he's had a successful opportunity to kill him? He knows.
But at the end of Perek Chav Dalet, he promised him his loyalty. Right? He was very kind to David. He embraced him. He cried. Right. One chapter later, he's running after him again. I mean, it could be that it's part of his paranoia. We just can never trust him. I think there's something else going on, though. There's only one logical, right? There's only one. Remember, it's a bridge. Perek Chav Dalet, he makes peace. Perek Chav Vav, he makes war. Well, what happened in between? That's true. Right. What happens in between is Perek Chav Hey. So the answer has to lie somewhere in the middle of in Perek Chav Hey, right? You go from Chav Dalet to Chav Vav. You have to get through. Chav Hey. It's only logical, correct?
Yeah.
What happened in Chav Hey to trigger Shaul's renewed pursuit of David even more intensely? What is it about David and Chav Hey in Perek Chav Hey that could annoy Shaul to no end?
That he was,
and I don't think it's about marriage to Avigail.
That he was expecting Nabal to give him compensation for protection, was that being like the king?
And that's part of it. Now expand that. Where is David in every story we've encountered since David left the palace until Perek Chav Hey? Where has David been?
Camped out with his merry men.
I mean, he's not hiding like he used to.
Right.
He's out in the open.
Right. David has been hiding. He went to Melech Gat. He went to Moab. He went to the Mitzudah Chosha. He went to En Gedi. The one time he came out into the open by Ki'ilah, he got into trouble, so he went back to the Ma'arav En Gedi. In Perek Chav Dalet, he found him in a cave. David's been hiding. Even the phrase, David Mistater, he's hiding. Perakov Hey, David is in Ma'on, Midbar Ma'on. Naval is making a big feast. Thousands upon thousands of cattle and sheep in the middle of the... David has had his shepherds out protecting, shepherds, his warriors, out protecting the shepherds of the local yeshuvim. Now, for months, this is not David hiding.
Like David got too comfortable for Shaul's
comfort. Right. And if you add to the fact that he's out in the open, the fact that he is running around with his protection agencies. Protection agency is a makeshift renegade army. Right. What do we have? A competing army now? And on top of the army, what does he ask Naval to provide him?
Compensation.
Compensation, also known as? Taxes?
It could be land.
Right. So you run your own army, you collect your own taxes, and when the people refuse to pay, what do you do when your people refuse to pay the taxes?
Threaten to take it by force.
Right. You threaten to take it by force. That's what a king does. Mm-hmm. Everything about David in Perakov Hey is a man who is running around Shevet Yehudah, Nachalat Yehudah, in the mindset of a melech. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what Avigal said to him. At Milchamot Hashem Adoni Nilcham. You are the king. You are fighting the battles of God. That's a direct threat to Shaul. The behavior of David in Perachaf Hei, he's running around like the sheriff of Nachlat Yehuda. That's a behavior that Shaul says, okay, that's not David who bears me no harm, who doesn't want to compete with me, who doesn't want my kingship, who's not a competition to me, who's not a threat to me. Nothing about what David said in Perakov Dalet, at least in the language, in the mindset of Shaul, rings true after Perakov Hey. He's running around like the sheriff of Nachlat Yehuda.
And maybe David thought that he wasn't threatened anymore.
Correct. That's exactly why he did it. He did it because he thought Shaul had let him go. Shaul recognized that he is peaceful. And on the contrary, Shaul is not. Right? Shaul has been neglecting Nachlat Yehudah all of these years, fighting the Plishtim in the north, but not protecting the Yishuvim in the south. So nobody else is protecting him against Amalek and against Midian and against all the nomadic tribes in the south, so he'll do it. And you have the classic conflict. Because on the one hand, David is coming out into the open because he's got that sense of security that Shaul is going to let him be. And Shaul looks at him and he says, how dare you behave like you're the king? Like you've got your own kingdom and your own alchus and your own taxes and your own collection agency and your own army. And so he runs after. So you could not have Perakov Vav if you didn't have the background of the story that unfolds in Perakov Hey. That's part one. Part two we'll do next week. And part two is to highlight David's behavior. Where David is at in Perakov Dalet and where David is at in Perakov Vav are two different worlds. They sound like the same story, they're not at all. And we're going to have to compare David's behavior, because David's behavior is a whole different issue. It's almost a different David. So that we will do B'zvat Hashem next week.